Welcome to episode 22 of season 9 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we pick our way through the final two Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4.0 and A Good Day to Die Hard, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, David.
Pleasure as always, yeah. We're reaching the end of Die Hard now. Well, we've got one more film to go, but
seriously, yeah, for sure. Tell me, what's your background with this film? Do you remember when you first saw it? Do you even like it? You know,
I definitely remember the first time I saw it, because the first time I saw it was for this podcast a couple of weeks ago. I don't know why I've missed it. I mean, I enjoy action films a great deal. I enjoy the Die Hard movies, but I think when it first came out, some of the reviews were a bit lukewarm, and I don't know, I just kind of missed it because people weren't raving about it. I thought, meh, and I just kind of missed it, and I just didn't get around to it for whatever reason. I was not avoiding it. I mean, I owned it on disc, but I just never got around to it. So yeah, I just watched it for the podcast the other day, and you tell you what, I actually quite enjoyed it. It's it doesn't feel as Die Hardy, if that's a word,
right,
as the early first three.
Correct.
And it's very over the top. It's got some really silly bits in it. But I went along with it. I enjoyed the ride. It's definitely not as good as the first three, which I love. But it's just taken as an action film in its own right. I had fun with it. So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised when I finally watched it.
Okay. Have you seen the fifth one yet, or not yet?
Not yet. I've heard worse things about that, so I'm dubious about that one. But
well, yeah, we'll I guess you could be thankful that you didn't take minutes on that one. but then again, you know, it would have at least given you the opportunity to watch it.
Yeah. I think I will watch it at some point. I think definitely soon. I've got a copy now. I found it cheap in a charity shop, which is like a thrift store, they call them in America. For like a pound.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So I've got it. I've got to watch it at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, are you the type of person who, if you think a movie is going to be bad, you're just going to completely avoid it, or you're still going to watch it so that you can say, okay, I've seen it. I can agree, disagree, whatever, and then move on.
I tend to avoid films that are generally like universally hated, then I don't bother. I've got too many other films I'm interested in watching, so I don't tend to go out of my way to watch them. The only thing that might sway me is when we have, I have my weekends of trash, as I call them, right, when I watch trashy movies with my friends, and a lot of the films we watch in those are terrible films, but they're kind of fun terrible, and we kind of expect that, so that's okay. But if I'm sat at home on my own and I'm thinking, right, what will I put on? I would never really put on a film that I've heard is terrible, unless I've heard one or two kind of dissenting voices say, no, it's better than people think. And if it's someone I trust, someone with a similar taste in movies to me, I'll take a gamble. But I tend to not waste my time, because I've got such a wide ranging taste in films that I'm never going to watch all the films I want to in my life. So why would I waste 2 hours watching something terrible?
I understand that. You see, my problem is that I like to be a completionist for things. So sometimes I will watch movies that I know are not going to be good. And, you know, I have a rule that once I start watching a movie, I can't stop watching it. Meaning even I might put it on the side, and then, you know, I'll finish it in a week or two or whatever it is. But my goal is to still continue to watch the movie, even if it's so bad.
I'm with you on that one. If I start watching something, it's very rare that I'll give up on something. But I think for me, I don't start watching a film that I expect to dislike,
right,
unless it's with the guys on a video weekend when we're watching purposely trashy.
Maybe you should maybe put that put A Good Day to Die Hard on that list.
Not a bad idea.
A weekend of trash, and then you can say, you know, I just want to be able to finally see this and, you know, and riff on it at the same time.
Yeah. And I guess occasionally with box sets, especially if I'm reviewing a box set, I have to watch all of them. So occasionally I'll end up watching something rubbish, but I tend to be quite picky. I tend to cherry pick what I watch a lot.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I do. If I watch something, generally the only reason I feel forced to watch something is if I'm doing some sort of series or something like that. Like I recently just finished watching every movie that was nominated for a screenplay award at the Oscars. Right. So I went all the way back, a lot of them I'd already seen. You know, I didn't go and rewatch things that I hadn't seen because, again, we're talking hundreds of movies, but when I came across one that I haven't seen yet, I watched it, and some of them were amazing and some of them were terrible, and that's it. You know, it was like, for me, it was I had this list and I had to get through that list, I started on Oscar night. So that was back in March, and I finished on June 5th or June 6th, with my rankings of all of them, that type of thing. So, here I had a period of 3 months where I was sitting and watching movies. Again, some of them were some amazing gems that I'd never even thought about. They'd never even been on the radar. So that's why I like doing these things every so often. I do come across some stuff. But then, when you get to movies in the 20s and 30s, some of them are great, and some of them you just I can't believe that someone actually made this movie.
I guess they don't always age well. Like, I do like my old movies, but some of them don't age all that well.
No.
But when they do, I do have a soft spot for the old ones.
So episode 22 begins with Trey looking for some info, and ends with Warlock deciding that he wants to help. So basically, we left things yesterday with John finally realizing that he's gonna be able to stop everything at Woodlawn. He's already there. He's going through the building trying to find something. What's he trying to find? We don't know. Obviously, he's trying to find a way to stop Gabriel from everything that he's doing. There's no question about that. That's the way you do these things.
Yeah.
And so the John is cautiously going through, I guess, the basement, trying to find things, and he opens the door a little crack, and they talked about the fact that because there are so many servers, they have to have all these different cooling places and stuff like that. So John is ready for that. There's no question about that. he's not dressed for it, but he knows that it's going to be nice and cold here.
What's his best?
As I mentioned, the first 2 seconds of this segment, we get Trey figuring out the authorization codes for the F-34. That's on it's en route, I guess you can say. And we can definitely tell that Trey is very good at what he's doing. When it comes to hacking, when it comes to stuff, even if Gabriel doesn't always have patience with him and stuff like that, but he still is quite good at what he does here, with going in decrypting the code, the go codes, in order to try and get connected with the with the F-35, which we will find out in over the next few days what their plan is with that. So we'll figure that out.
That first shot does bring up a bit of a music, a kind of a movie trope that always makes me kind of giggle, is kind of showing computer screens of hackers, and it always makes it look really cool, like they've got cool fonts and cool colors and there's loads going on, when in reality, I mean, I'm not a computer hacker myself, but I imagine it's just basically looking at code and seeing really bland screens of just data coming down. It won't look as kind of cool and color coordinated as this.
No,
at all.
No, no, no.
I always get it in movies. It's always very very silly.
Yeah, and especially in this movie. I mean, we've talked about it. The number of stuff they've shown on the screens and the stuff that we've caught also that are incorrect. Because they're not expecting anyone to be looking at that screen. You get 2 seconds to look at it. So, but this screen, I didn't find anything that was off base here, but what's very cool is you see that they, there's like a radar screen, and he has like a GPS locator, and he's working on a decryption, and he's able to get the authorization code. Yeah, you know, again, these are not little short codes. Yeah, it's like a 15-digit code.
So yeah, yeah.
It's not going to be as simple to get it. But yeah, they make the screen very, very busy, giving us you know the feeling that you know Trey is this super you know super hacker. I mean, we saw it when we were in Warlock's command center. You know, the stuff he had on the screen there also. It was the same thing. Yeah, yeah. There's so much stuff going on. I mean, again, I'm not a computer hacker. I'm not even close to that. And, you know, the most I will have is like three screens open at once that I'm working on. You know, that's the most. And that's usually because I'm copying files from one to the other. You know, it's not even a question of working on three different screens at the same time. You know.
I am a bit of a multitasker. I quite often have a few things going. So I can kind of buy the lots of stuff going on. Although they would definitely have multiple screens. Although does he have? I think possibly they do have multiple screens at some points in this film. I can't remember. I've tried remember where because obviously I can't see the shot before this. But or are they on the move by now? Because I know they go on the move at some point, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. They're moving. Oh, yeah, they killed everyone.
Well, I guess they couldn't really have multiple screens then. But yeah,
right. They killed all the other you know hackers. Yeah. Already a few days ago, last week that happened.
We're near the end of the film, aren't we?
Yes. These are, you know, we're very close to the end.
Yeah.
You know, after our three segments over the next 3 days, we have another two segments, and that's it. You know, we're done. Yeah, you know, so we're getting close to the end. and we're talking about, you know, when you and I are done now, we have like 8 minutes left of the movie. Yeah,
that. Yeah. So. And is some of that credits, or do you not include credit?
No, it includes credits also.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, when you're doing 5 minute chunks, so you know, if you have, you know, I think it's about 2.5 minutes of credits, and then the final 3 minutes, which I will have with Jay, is all credits. You know, that type of thing. So that helps also from that perspective. Now this season, I decided to actually talk about credits, unlike last season where I had. Special interviews, you know, during the credits. But, you know, I didn't think I was really going to find anyone. Doing it 5 minutes at a time makes it more difficult to do the interviews. But whatever. Right. So we're back with John in Woodlawn, and he's, you know, walking around trying to figure out what's going on. He walks into what looks like it looks like a Star Wars scene. You know, with the way that the grate is, you know, where he just has to look down at this grate, and you know what's great is that we then see the goon, you know, hiding underneath. Did you notice that everything is written backwards?
Oh no!
High pressure condenser,
I guess. It's a bit murky on my screen. I can't really.
Condensate, something like that. But again, everything is backwards, which makes me wonder how that happens. You know, unless they just reverse the shot. Yeah, that would be.
They might have flopped it. Yeah, I mean, I've done that sometimes when I've edited just to fix the line of sight. If it looks weird, you've got to flop a shot sometimes. But usually, the rule is if there's text in shot, you can't get away with it. So I don't know, unless it's a thing with certain types of industrial, I don't know why you would.
If you're only looking at it for a second, I don't know, and maybe it doesn't matter. You know,
they get away with it.
Nobody's going to be looking at this movie, you know, 5 minutes at a time. So why would anybody pay attention to the fact that it says things, you know, backwards? I don't know. Slowly looks in, you know, getting ready to walk on this little bridge going across. Trying to figure out what he's going to do, and then he ends up taking the walkie-talkie that he has, and you know he continues to talk to Gabriel, and he goes, "You might want to start thinking about what you want on your headstone."
I do like how he's cut off there, like he's about to deliver a bit of a cheeky one-liner, and then he's just kind of cut off just before he quite finishes it.
Yeah,
which is kind of a nice twist.
Yeah. Because the guy underneath the goon underneath hears that he's taunting Gabriel and decides to start shooting at him.
Yeah.
And John reacts really well, but this guy is unbelievable, the way that he's jumping around and doing stuff here. It's great.
Yeah, this is I was interested in that because it's kind of to me it's clearly like he's going for a parkour kind of thing, and I seem to remember back when this came out, it was quite it was very popular. I mean, it's still around, people still do it now, but if I remember correctly, it was pretty popular then. It was a couple of years that there was another film, District 13, I think it's called in the UK. I think it's called something else elsewhere, but there was like a parkour action film, and it was just kind of the in thing back then. So I feel like this is an attempt to kind of bring that in there to appeal to a younger audience, maybe. But it is cool. It's very cool.
Yeah, and he jumps around, and John keeps making lines the whole time as he's missing him, because the way he's jumping around, he goes, "Christ!" He goes, "Damn hamster!" Here you go.
That was one line that I didn't quite get. I think it's an odd word for what he's doing. Like hamsters, I guess hamsters hide in little holes and things, but they're not very acrobatic. They're just little blobs.
Yeah, I guess it's the idea that he's just moving around.
Yeah, yeah. I did find that weird. I mean, to me, it'd be more like some sort of ape or whatever, orangutan or something like that, but I don't know. He went with hamster. It just seemed really weird choice of words to me.
And then he thinks he gets him, and he goes, "Here you go," and he misses again, and then he goes, "Stay still, Spider-Boy." Now, I love the fact that he calls him Spider-Boy, because to me that sounds like he's saying that because of, you know, they're afraid of copyright infringement.
Yeah, yeah.
They're calling him Spider-Man, and he just has to call him Spider-Boy. So who knows? And he tries again. And goes, "That's right." And you know, he just isn't able to catch him. This guy. I mean, again, we've seen this goon many times in this movie, where he is just jumping around. He's great. You know, it's a great casting choice to put this. You know, to give us this character who's actually able. Because my assumption is that this is not special effects. This guy is really jumping around the way that he is.
Yeah.
You know, so they found someone who's quite agile to be able to, you know, jump around. And he does all these acrobatic stuff and stuff like that, you know. And I love how he gets right under John and is just then he pulls out his gun. But, you know, John sees it and then kicks the gun out of his, you know, out of his hand.
Did you say he's called? I'm trying to look up the character now. I'm interested to see what else he's been in. Do you know what's the name of that character he's fighting? I can't remember.
Okay, so all right, so that's Cyril Raffaelli.
Aha, and he is actually in the film I mentioned earlier, District B-13. Yeah, sequel. He did the stunt work on District B-13 and District 13 Ultimatum. Right. So okay. That would make sense.
Okay, so yeah, it is. It's okay. It's Cyril then, because he's 52 stunt credits on IMDb and only 13 acting credits.
Yeah, yeah, this is definitely, it's definitely him. Yeah, they must have hired him from District B-13, because as I say, it's got a similar style to those action scenes, with incorporating kind of parkour into action.
Right, District B-13 came out in 2004, so yeah, it's 3 years earlier. That makes sense. He was also in The Incredible Hulk. He did the motion capture stuff for Tim Roth.
Wow. And The Transporter as well, the Transporter films, which are good action movies. Oh, and Brotherhood of the Wolf, which is fantastic. Action then. Yeah, cool. Yeah, he's done some good stuff. Ronin, wow. Yeah, talented guy.
Yeah, well, you can see that just from what he's jumping around here. But he has a pretty large, I mean, it's strange that a stuntman is only going to have a credit one credit a year.
Yeah.
You know, this thing.
He's fight director and coordinator in a lot of these, so I guess it's a bigger job than just showing up and doing a few stunts. I guess I think it sounds like he's coordinating a lot of the action.
Maybe.
Which is, I guess, it takes time to plan out these things. And yeah. He was very busy in like 2000, 2001 and stuff. But yeah, interesting.
Right. Okay, actually, they say some interesting things here on IMDb. It says that he uses Shotokan karate and wushu styles, and he began his training in acrobatics when he was 14 years old. So that makes sense. A long time. That makes a lot of sense here also. You know, that this, I mean, because the way that he does this stuff is definitely acrobatic. Mm. Yeah, there's no question about that.
Absolutely.
So, you know, he then you know, John, after John kicks the gun out of his hand, he ends up, swinging up on top and continuing, with fighting against John. And, he starts kicking John. I love how John likes to take a beating in these movies.
Oh, yeah, always.
And what's really cool is, like, he kicks John and John falls off of this little bridge, and he grabs onto a pipe or something in order to hold him up. And then what he does is he jumps and he does a real big acrobatic thing, which isn't something you'd think one would do if they're in the middle of a firefight. You know, to take the extra time to do what he does is, like, he flips over. Yeah. He flips down and then he twirls around the one of the pipes in order to get to John, and then he kicks John, and John lands on one of the other bridges there, and then he swings around and still, he's always in control, and he crawls into some little duct.
I guess that swing
maybe
gives
that's why he calls him a hamster.
Yeah, I guess that swing gives him momentum as well. It gives him extra force when he hits him, so it makes sense. It's not just kind of for show, I guess.
Right, and then John then sees his gun, and or he sees Rand's gun, and is getting ready to go towards it. He moves towards it and reaches his hand out to get it, and then Rand just pops in from above, and he sees the gun also. He sees where John is looking. And then he does something really cool. He basically makes himself nice and slim and goes between certain pipes and hangs himself down there in order to grab the gun and start shooting at John from there. Which, again, it's such an amazing move. You know, it makes you sad that this is a goon that's not going to live. You know, because of the way that he's just doing stuff so cool with the way that he does it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and then John happens to see a lever, surprisingly, right next to him, that says on it liquid nitrogen, and John decides to turn it on. He kicks it. And as Rand is getting ready to shoot him, the liquid nitrogen sprays out specifically, directly, exactly where. And he is standing and basically freezes him, and he loses his grip, ends up dropping leaving the gun, and then falls into
a Mensa.
Yeah, something like that.
And that again, that is such a classic kind of action movie trope. I guess you get them from, I don't know if they might have been in films before this, but I always think of them as a bit of a classic James Bond kind of device.
Yeah. We've seen it in Die Hard movies before. In Die Hard 2, Major Grant died by falling into the propeller of the plane.
Oh yeah.
We've done something similar.
Yeah, but there's so many kind of action movies set in kind of factories and things that have these bizarre kind of mincing, chopping kind of machines.
Yeah.
I wonder how popular these types of machines actually are in real life.
Yeah, seriously. You'd think that there's probably more of a chance that these people are going to. Have work in safer areas than they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then John is quite happy about this, obviously. And then the shot changes, and we're with Gabriel, who is walking with his two hostages, both Farrell and Lucy. And Farrell then and says to her, "Seriously, you probably shouldn't antagonize them, since they have all the loaded guns and whatnot." And I love Lucy's response to him. She goes, "Listen, we just take a minute and dig deep for a bigger set of balls, because you're going to need them before we're through." And he looks at her and he goes, "Wow, I know that tone. It's just weird hearing it from somebody with hair." Again, it's a great line. You see that he's holding back from saying something else, from saying, from someone who looks so well, so good as you, or whatever it is. he catches himself slightly there. But I like and dislike the way that they're making Lucy act here. Because on the one hand, I mean, I talked about this a little bit the last few days, but you know, we see from the beginning of the movie that she's estranged from her father. She doesn't want to have anything to do with him. Okay, and here they're giving her McClane qualities, which
Yeah.
maybe they're deep down or whatever it is, but it's just a little strange.
Yeah. I know what you mean. And I think as well, what I find with Lucy's character is she talks very tough, which is good. I think the performance is good. And I say she's got some nice lines and she talks tough. But at the same time, it's a bit of a shame she ends up just being the damsel in distress ultimately. She doesn't really
Right.
do anything against the bad guys. She's just captured and used as bait, sort of thing, which is a bit of a shame. But it's Die Hard, I guess. It's not about her being a hero, but yeah, at the same time, it's like they're trying to make a tough female character, and they don't really deliver in the end ultimately, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. It would have been nicer if they would have given her maybe, I mean, again, spoiler alert, but maybe it would have been nicer if she was the one who shot Gabriel
Yeah, yeah,
next
yeah.
week instead of Farrell
Yeah.
later this week. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. Although at the same time, I guess another part of the film is Farrell's kind of arc, I guess, too. So it makes sense for him to do it. But yeah, it might be nice for her to play a bigger part in it.
Well, we'll have to we have to deal with what we have. You
Yeah.
know, they're not really giving us much of a choice.
No.
And so the two of them are just following Gabriel and all his men. Emerson, we see, is behind them, making sure that they actually get into the van. You know, he gets basically pushed into the van by Emerson, who closes the door on them. And then we're back to John, who's once again walking through Woodlawn trying to find everyone who now apparently have already left. Then he actually sees the truck and the hazmat van getting ready to leave, and he hides so that they can't see him. You know, that type of thing. Now, and but he does notice that Lucy and Farrell are actually in the van, being taken as hostages. And then we see John looking as the truck comes by, and it's very strange because John then jumps on top of the truck as it drives past. But you see, my problem with this whole idea is that how is it actually possible that John is on a higher level? Because we just saw him seconds ago that he was,
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing because that POV shot you see earlier is ground level looking at those vans. Yeah, I thought exactly the same thing just watching it again now. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's like how did he get there?
No. And you couldn't argue that time has passed because you see the lorry setting off. It's like
That's right.
the same time as the other one.
Yeah, so
Yeah, I don't get that
who
at
knows?
all.
Somehow he transported above and is able to jump onto the top of the truck. And the truck keeps going as John is trying to figure out what he's going to do. And then as the truck continues, we actually now get a shot of the helicopters with the FBI guys getting closer. And then we get Melina saying, "Sir, ETA 15 minutes." So they're quite happy about they're going to be there soon, getting to where everyone no longer is. And then we're back on the truck, and we see the truck just barreling along on the road, and John is slowly inching his way forward to the cab of the truck, and then he slips himself down and then walks on the side and gets all the way to the door of the truck. And then he just takes out his gun and just shoots into the door,
Yeah.
killing the driver. Which, again, I don't know if that's the smartest way to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, one of the things is that the John, first of all, we know John is familiar with doing this type of thing because he did the same thing last in the last movie.
Yeah.
One of Simon's guys in the truck.
Yeah.
You know, when he said his name was Mickey O'Brien, and then he starts shooting into the truck and kills him. But that truck is not actually moving.
No.
That's when he kills Nils, and I don't remember the second guy's name. And here he's doing it while the truck is driving. So, you'd think that if he's actually going to kill the driver by doing this, the truck is going to immediately veer off to the side and kill John Doe. But, action movies, what do you expect? So he kills the driver, opens the door, throws the driver out, and still gets in while the truck is still driving. And John just continues and, going after the hazmat van as much as he can. So, typical John stuff to be doing stuff. This is what John likes to do.
Yeah. And the whole kind of bit is running along the top of the truck does have a bit of an old school, like, Western, like running on the top of the train kind of feel to it. It's got a bit of an old school stunt work, which is nice. Yeah. Leading us into the, which we'll get to, I guess, later on, is the less old school kind of showdown that is to come.
Yes, yes, John. That's the way that John does stuff. It's still nice, the fluid way. You see, I've talked about this numerous times, and I'm sure I will continue talking about it over the next, the next 25 episodes, of both of these movies. How, you sort of alluded to it at the beginning, that the original Die Hard trilogy, so the way that things work there is we get the feeling that John is this man, it's more of a thriller. He's stuck in a particular place and needs to try and stop the bad guys. The last two movies, they turn things into action movies, and which is something that again makes sense for this time period, because that's what they did with a lot of different franchises. James Bond became more of an action movie, in this time frame. Mission Impossible. There are other examples
There's still plenty of action scenes in the first two, but it's the way they're presented and the way the situation that he's in, like that kind of restricted, trapped kind of a sense that you get in those, isn't quite there in this one. You can metaphorically trap, maybe. Well, no, he's not really trapped at all in this one. In the third one, you could say he's trapped in the situation, like, because he has to do these things. Whereas this one is, he's just trying to stop the bad guys. It's it's definitely more traditional action.
I see, for me, Die Hard is the thriller aspect, not the action aspect. And that's one of the reasons why I like these two movies less than the others, because for me, I can go see an action movie anytime. You don't have to. Why does it need to be John McClane? Is the guy who gets stuck in a building, gets stuck in an airport, gets stuck in a city. It's even, they've opened it even larger, with the way that it is. And again, it's fun. I don't hate this movie. I definitely don't hate it as much as the next one. But
it's not Die Hard. Yeah,
I know what you mean. It doesn't feel to me as a Die Hard movie. That's what it comes down to. Even though it is called Die Hard. But you deal with what you have.
As I say, it's still fun. It's just,
For sure. Like that. No question about that. Okay, and then we get a quick shot of the CB dash on the dashboard. Now, I don't know if you noticed it, because it went by really quickly. We have literally like a second of them showing it. And we see that the CB is on the station 66.6 hertz. Okay, which, as soon as I saw that, I was like, okay, this is pretty funny, because he's not there. He hasn't contacted Warlock yet, but he's already on the right station.
Very lucky.
It's again, it's a goof. It's something that the first time that Farrell is we meet Farrell, he's on a chat screen. And we see the full chat between him and Warlock. And then a few seconds later, they actually start their chat. And it's the exact same messages. it's understandable why they're doing this, but
yeah,
right. And so John, you know, keeps his distance, but is still trying to catch them, catch the hazmat van, you know, to try and save both Lucy and Farrell. Now, did you notice they give us like the shot sort of pans out, and so it's probably at the 3 minute mark of this particular episode. Okay, you see a whole bunch of cars and trucks that are on the highway above him, and they're all completely stopped, meaning that that's just a matte painting.
I'll look now. Oh yeah.
Gabriel decides to open up, you know, take off the handcuffs on Farrell, and he goes, mm-hmm. "Fix it." And he goes, "Oh, why? You're just gonna kill me afterwards. If I fix it, I know that." And you know, he's Gabriel's. What do you think of Gabriel as a villain?
I was gonna say I like it. I think it works. It kind of it feels like a modern villain. I think he's quite relevant still now. He kind of feels basically a bit like a bit of a. I mean, I just swear on this podcast.
Yes, you can swear as much as you want.
a bit of an asshole who's kind of swinging his dick basically.
Yeah,
and kind of showing off. That's kind of well, it's a little bit more than that later on, I guess. But it's kind of because I mean, basically, his whole thing is he's kind of a bit pissed off that he. Didn't get the respect he deserved, and he's kind of, this whole attack is almost seems like him just showing what he's capable of in a way. I mean, there's a bit more to it, but yeah, but I think he sells it. I like him as a villain. I think he does well with it. That ego comes through.
Right. Like, where would you rank him then on the four diehard villains that you know?
Ooh. He'd probably still be at the bottom because the other villains, I do like the other villains quite a lot. But he's respectable. He's a quality wise, I think he's a decent villain, but no, I do prefer the other three. I think they are pretty strong in the other three films.
Yeah. Okay.
You can't beat Alan Rickman, really.
No. No, not at all. And, so we're back with Farrell, who's arguing, and he hits him across the face, and that doesn't really help either. Farrell is not happy. He's definitely doesn't really want to do any of this stuff. And he goes, "I'm not going to do it." And he goes, "Oh no, because you know Gabriel then decides to take a gun and point it at his leg. At his kneecap, getting ready to kneecap him. Gabriel gets interrupted by Emerson, who goes, "Robinson is coming in real fast." He goes, "I'm sorry, what?" He goes, "Something's wrong. Robinson is coming too fast." And then Trey goes, "It's not Robinson." And Lucy goes, "That would be my dad." Which, it goes back to what you were saying before, that she's the typical damsel in distress here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really giving, they don't give her enough to deal with at that point.
Mm.
You know, I mentioned this at some other point. It makes you wonder what they talked about at the McLean family, household, about, you know, all the exploits that John has gone through, you know, over the years.
He must have some serious PTSD at this point. It's all the stuff that he's been through.
Probably. Right. And John just starts barreling through other cars that are coming his way, and then he goes over to the reaches over to the CB and changes the band, you know, so that it now is on 66.6, even though we know it already was on 66.6. And then he goes, Freddie, it's John McClane. Look, I know you can hear me. This is your frequency, right? Now, how does that work? Is Freddy the only person in the world who's going to be on this frequency?
66.6. Well, I guess not. I think I don't know. You get a lot of these CB enthusiasts, don't you? You just kind of listen into all sorts of stuff. But I don't know how popular that particular channel is. I have no idea. But
exactly.
But there's only a limited number of Well, I guess things. I guess it's no, quite. But again, it's probably quite a lot, though. But
yeah, but it's funny we see that you know, they give us a shot of Kevin Smith, you know, sleeping.
Yeah.
And John goes 666. Come on, pick up the mic, Freddie. And then he ends up picking up the phone. He goes, "Nobody here by that name. Sorry." And he goes, "Hacker jerk off, warlock." Pretty funny that he does it that way. He goes,
Yeah.
"I need you to do whatever it is you do to pass me through to the FBI, the Deputy Director Bowman. You hear me?" He goes, "Are you serious? You want me to intentionally open up a comm line to the head of the FBI Cyber Division? I don't think so. Freddy, goddammit, they have my daughter." And then he thinks about it for a second, you know. And John is able to multitask. He's, you know, he's still driving the truck, barreling through the streets.
I like that shot as well. I do. I'm a sucker for a good car chase, and the camera work. I did find the kind of action cinematography in the film in general really good. But that's a good example of that. It's got the camera's nice and low. You get a nice and wide. You get the truck, a good bit of stunt work. The truck smashing through the cars. I've got a real sweet, a real taste for it, kind of shots like that. I don't know why. There's something about them.
Okay, that's fair. And then Freddie thinks about it for a second, Warlock, and he goes, "All right, I can do that. Hold on." And John goes, "Thank you." what's funny is, I mean, you mentioned the fact that he's crashing through these cars, but, you know, the cars don't look like anyone's in them. You know, but they're
just parked on the side, I guess.
No, but they're like parked in at strange angles so that the truck can hit them. You know, it's not like they're properly parked.
Yeah.
So, and that's how this episode ends. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with this episode, David?
Not really. I guess some of the stuff I guess we could talk about Kevin Smith's role. I had no idea he was in it, so it was quite a surprise when he first popped in. I was like, "Is that Kevin Smith?" But because he doesn't do a huge amount of acting, he does do some acting. Obviously, he's in a lot of his own films,
yeah,
as Silent Bob.
That's right.
But yeah, and he fits the role quite nicely. I thought it's kind of a nice touch having him in there, and yeah, he gets away with it. He as I say, he doesn't act a great deal, so I wouldn't say he's one of the finest actors of our times, but in the right roles, including this, I think he did a good job.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I liked him popping up here. Yeah, I like the fact that they gave us a, you know, a familiar face for that type of character.
Yeah,
I think that works. Okay,
and obviously, and he worked with Bruce Willis, didn't he? I'm trying to think. Was that after this? He was in, because he did Cop. Was it Cop Out? Wasn't that with Kevin Smith? Am I making that up? Yeah, that was directed by Kevin Smith. Yeah, that was 2010. So it was after.
That was after this. After.
Interesting.
Right. That was after Friendship Began, I guess.
Yeah. They must have got on.
Interesting. Okay. Okay, so today's segment is Top Cop, where my guest will give their top five movie detectives / law enforcement officers or something like that. So why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Yeah, I'm mine are a bit random. I think it was partly just coming up with whatever just randomly sprang to mind. I didn't put enough thought into it. But my number five is, there's a kind of a small kind of subgenre of films made in Hong Kong that are often dubbed girls with guns movies, where they're kind of action movies where they had female kind of protagonists kicking a lot of ass. With martial arts and also with a bit of weaponry. So I want to get one of those in. So for my number five, I went with Officer Michelle Yip, who is played by Michelle Yeoh, and that is it. She's in the film Royal Warriors, which is an awesome film. It's one of my... I only kind of discovered it a few years ago, but it instantly jumped up in a kind of top 20 action movies ever. It's awesome. Really? It's just really over the top, really mad, but it's got amazing pace. It's got some crazy set pieces. I loved it. So yeah, I wanted to put that one in there. And then number four, this was the case of I really wanted to get some Eurocrime or a Polizio Tesci, like an Italian crime movie in there. And so I went with my favourite Polizio Tesci, which is The Big Racket, and Inspector Nico Palmieri, who's played by the great Fabio Testi, because that's an awesome film.
What's the name of the movie?
The Big Racket.
Okay.
It's a fantastic film. It's pretty brutal. But that's worth tracking down if you've not seen it. The Italians knew how to do a cool kind of police crime sort of action movie. So yes, that he made the list. Although in the I try to remember now exactly what happens there, but yeah, I watched it next to another one, so I get the plots mixed up. But if I'm right in thinking, he kind of does leave the force and goes a bit rogue in the end of the film. But he starts off as a well-meaning, solid cop who wants to take down the bad guys. And then the last three films, I've gone with some franchise police detectives, just because they were memorable characters. So yeah, number three, I'm going to go with Inspector Chan Kar Kui, who is basically Jackie Chan in the Police Story movies, because the Police Story movies are awesome. And I love a bit of Jackie Chan, so I had to go with that. And then my last two, I've gone comedy. So my number two favorite police detective in film is Inspector Jacques Clouseau from the Pink Panther movies, because I grew up watching those and I absolutely adore them. They're a lot of fun, and he's such a memorable character. Okay, he's a terrible police detective, but I love him, so I don't care. He's in there. And similarly, I went number one. I don't know why, but this just came to mind instantly and nothing else could top it. And that is Lieutenant Frank Drebin from Police Squad, from the Naked Gun movies and the Police Squad TV series. He's my number one, just because, again, I grew up watching these films and they're so fun. And they're just both, as I say, those top two are just incredibly memorable police detectives, or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
So yeah, that's my list.
Yeah, as much as I love Drebin, he's not a very good detective. He's just hilarious. You know,
yeah, yeah.
That's what it comes down to. All right, great. And now we will actually do the daily segment, which is called State Your Motto. So
okay.
Every state in the U.S. plus all of the various territories have a motto. Okay.
Okay.
So what I'm going to give you a state, and then I'm going to give you three choices as to what that state motto is.
Okay.
Now, all three of these are real state mottos. It's just not necessarily, you know, it's not the one that I'm giving you. So the first state I'm going to give you today, well, the state I'm going to give you today is Alaska.
Okay.
So your first choice is All for Our Country. The second one is North to the Future, or the third one is I Will Defend.
I'm going to guess North to the Future, maybe.
And you would be correct.
Hey.
Nicely
awesome.
Done. They're not always so easy, but yeah.
I was going to say, it made sense, that one.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So, David, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me at blueprintreview.co.uk, where I cover largely physical media, but also just films in general, a little bit of TV, and occasionally some video games. So yeah, check it out.
Okay, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@moverob.net. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.